Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification, and they're satisfying to scratch no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.
It's a film study for we're recording on Friday, August 16th. Kind of give a date stamp of where we're at. We're going to look back at the offense tonight in the Ravens-Packers preseason week number 2, where the Ravens continued their streak of winning preseason games. Ken McCusick, how you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Not bad down here in Florida. We're joined tonight also by Cole Jackson from Russell Street Report and the Neutral Zone Infraction Podcast. Cole, how you doing?
Good, man. Thank you guys for having me on. It's always a pleasure to join this podcast and talk about some film.
Tell us a little bit about your background, Cole. You coach offensive line?
I did. I'm actually, as you guys know, I have a newborn, 9 months. Actually, tomorrow morning will be 9 months. So I'm taking the year off. I coached last year, AAA football up in Canada in Ontario. So that's the 13-14 Bantam group. Actually, fun note for my Maryland-based listeners, I graduated my left tackle down to a prep school down in Hagersville, Maryland. So he's playing, I can't remember the name of the school, but he's down there starting his grade 9 season. He apparently in Canada, in the United States, some of the age differences meant that he was supposed to be going into grade 9 up here, but when he went down there, he was actually eligible to be in grade 8. So he kind of went down and did almost like a redshirt year before high school.
There you go.
So super great program we have up here in Ottawa. We actually lost in the provincial finals to Windsor last year, which is right near the Michigan border. So yeah, that's my background. And then when I was in high school, played football, left guard and defensive tackle.
All right, very good. All right, Josh, how do you want to start us off here? What do we want to talk about first?
I mean, why don't we just jump into it? We talked at the first preseason game about there being a struggle to get into the stadium and stuff. So here was another attempt at M&T Bank Stadium with a game with great weather. Did the Ravens figure that out and get people in?
Okay. Much faster getting through the lines. In fact, we showed up, and I could not believe how short the lines were the second time around. They had people who knew you had a lanyard, you swipe this, and that's, of course, all I care about. But other people coming in with tickets on their phone, they couldn't have been having problems with it because they didn't have lines when we got there, and otherwise they would have. So that problem appears to have been solved.
All right, well, that's good news. That means we can just jump straight into the game. I guess it was the first two drives where Lamar Jackson was out there and most of the starters, so why don't we just start there?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that I saw in those two drives other than the two penalties, the penalty on Snead and the other penalty on Snead, that were really suboptimal. They moved the ball effectively. They really did all the things that you want the Ravens offense to do, that you expect the Ravens offense to do. They did it not with a bunch of Lamar running, but they had one electric Lamar run that certainly showed what they're capable of. And they scored 6 points. They should have scored 10, but still, they ran the ball effectively. They controlled the ball. Jermaine Illuminor dominated at left guard. We're going to talk a little bit about that. They added this wrinkle with having Patrick Ricard convert first downs that I really like on short yardage. Just a lot of good things to point to on those two drives.
All right, that's good. Does anything from those first two drives stand out to you, Cole, before we really dig deep?
The big thing that stood out to me, just not to repeat Ken, but one of the things that stood out was actually Nick Boyle's receptions. He's just such an underrated guy. It's not really a mystery to Ravens fans for why he hasn't had a receiving touchdown in his career, and it's because he's always catching those, you know, 6-7 yarders, and they're not necessarily, you know, playmaker plays, but they move the ball, right? And this is, from what we've seen of Lamar, I think it's going to be one of those death by a thousand cuts offenses. Like, it's going to be efficiently moving the ball, trying to get those chunk plays, and then picking up a big play when they need to. And that's exactly what we saw from the first drive. If it wasn't brought back on a penalty, it was, they kind of rallied off a couple 4, 5, 6 yard plays, and then they hit the 17 yard reception to Snead. And then Lamar takes off for what should have been a touchdown. I thought that was technically based on the rule, it was a penalty. But, you know, I'm still going to say it's a little ticky-tacky because it was such a highlight. But, no, I just I see a real efficient offense forming, and it's good to see.
Yeah. That block, by the way, remind me of Bolden's block on Weddle on the 4th and 29 play. It was right from the side. It wasn't from behind. And, I'm glad that one didn't get called back and this one did, if I had to choose, obviously. But still, it's too bad. Well, all right.
All of this was done without Marquise Brown, who we still haven't seen take the field yet.
Yeah, that's right.
In a game.
He's been in practice. They held him out again this week. I think there's a pretty good chance he'll play in the dress rehearsal in week 3. Otherwise, I think you probably hold him out till the regular season if you don't see him next week.
Yeah, that's my expectation as well. I think we see him only maybe a drive next week, but it looks like they're implementing a nice ramp-up plan for him.
All right, so let's talk about some other situations. Sorry, I'm just going to move ahead here, Josh, if you don't mind. The Ravens running back situation has been something that a lot of people are asking questions about. One of the cool things about those first two drives was the way they rotated in all four of those primary backs, plus Ricard, for that matter, Ingram, Dixon, Edwards, and Hill, all got snaps on those first two drives. Anyway, the question for you, Cole, jump in whenever you feel me pausing or whatever. But I did feel like there's a real question of who they keep. I don't really see a likelihood that they're going to keep all five of those guys. I think they'll keep four. Based on what Ricard's done, I think he's just done too much in terms of varied things within Roman's offense for me not to believe that Roman wants to keep him. So then I think it brings you down to three running backs. And unfortunately, I think the guy on the outside is Ken Dixon right now. And it's based mostly on the GM reasons and not the actual play reasons.
Yeah, I think Patrick Ricard has brought an interesting positional debate because he played so well as a three tech last week. But then this week he makes all of his plays as a fullback. So you get stuck debating, well, is he going to fit under a running back? Is he going to fit under defensive linemen when you're doing your numbers. I think, based on what I've seen from guys like Dalen Mack, Gerald Willis, I think, not to jump into the defense too much, but I think he actually has a case as a three tech. So I think I see a case where they keep five running backs if you count Ricard as a running back. But I'm really, when I'm doing my breakdown, I'm slotting him as a defensive lineman. So me and Adam and Chibs over from the NCI podcast are doing a top 53-man prediction. So I have Hill, Ingram, Dixon, and Edwards on as my four running backs, and I have Ricard as a defensive lineman, making it five running backs technically.
Okay, so who you dropping off on the defensive line so that Ricard can make it? Willis?
I haven't seen anything too special other than one play that stood out to me was he chased down that running back screen, showing some blazing speed. But other than that, he's just not standing out the way I'd like to see against third stringers. And the tough one is what to do with the guy like Dalen Mack, who, again, we drafted. He has that draft status, but he's just not really standing out to me. So that's kind of where I currently have Dalen Mack. I actually have him as like a practice squad guy right now, and I know that sounds crazy based on the Ravens roster history, but that's where I have him slotted based on performance.
Okay. All right. I can't, as a conscientious GM, I couldn't try and run him through the practice squad. I could try and put him on IR, but I couldn't.
Yeah. I've been getting into debates on Twitter with our Ravens flock about, you know, is this Phantom IR thing real, or is it just, you know, a guy did really get hurt and was supposed to miss some weeks, so they IR'd him. I could see it as kind of he stubs his toe getting breakfast in the morning and he ends up on IR. I really could. He looks like that kind of candidate right now because with Pierce and Williams and their contract situations and, you know, potentially cutting Williams for some savings next year, I think that's why they drafted Mack. Like, he has that useful kind of one tech, three tech ability. So
it does. It makes all the sense in the world for them to keep him somehow this year. It may mean the same thing for Willis, that you like to have the extra big body around, and there may not be room. But anyway, the good thing about the NFL, if you want to stash somebody on the IR, everybody's getting hurt every couple of weeks. So you can always make the case that way if you want to. And, you know, the IR now has that nice feature that you can bring somebody back at midseason, which unfortunately the Ravens may really have use for at cornerback this year. So just to move on, I think we've made our points pretty clearly here. But Dixon, with 0 years remaining of team control, is the main reason I don't want to keep him, or that I think he is behind some of these other players. Edwards is not as talented a back as Dixon, I'd be the first to admit it, but Edwards has three cheap years remaining, and schematically he's a complete yin and yang fit for what Jackson does. So it makes all the sense in the world to keep a big back. Edwards is a very cheap and pretty good big back. He's not a special guy. I really don't believe that. But he's been a solid guy for a year, and he's cheap as hell. I don't know why you wouldn't keep him.
Yeah, it's hard not to look at the combination of Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards, and Justice Hill and not get memories of the three-headed monster, Laron McLean, Willis McGahee, and Ray Rice. Like,
thinking that.
Their complementary skill sets. Like, I don't get me wrong, Gus Edwards isn't, you know, a converted fullback, but he's a hammer, just the way McLean was. And McGahee was kind of that do-it-all back the way Ingram is. And I would argue that Hill is a little bit more of a guy that could kind of don't get me wrong, you could split Ray Rice out and he can catch the ball. We all know that. But he's not necessarily a gadget player the way Hill reminds me of a Darren Sproles right now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Rice is similar to that. I guess I'm getting a little nitpicky here, but it's the three-headed monster all over again, and I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, very exciting. And I thought this exact same thing tonight within the last hour about that, and it definitely is very similar. Let's talk about the offensive line, because the Ravens have a big battle at left guard, the biggest one in camp, probably positionally, unless you want to look at the outside linebacker spot, which also has a terrific battle going on. But at left guard, I have never seen a situation where five guys are competing at one time for a starting spot. And we do not have a majority likelihood at this point, in my opinion. I think we have some pluralities, maybe a couple guys who are around 35% to win the job. But I don't think anybody's as high as 50 right now.
Yeah, it's making doing this whole roster prediction thing difficult because take this week, for example, I had before yesterday's game, I had Jermaine Illuminor off the team. Like I just didn't see a purpose. I had, you know, we'll have Sanat as our tackle. And then I don't see him as a left guard, but then he has that performance last night. And it's like, all right, kid, you're back in. You're probably starting now. It just, I mean, this is how preseason goes, right? Like you ride the ebbs and the flows. And I think this really raises a good point, Ken. Like it's so important to seize your opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Illuminor, even the clock is running out on him as a third year player. We should be thinking about him the same way we think about Tyus Bowser or Tim Williams, who everybody is, you know, seems ready to cut, particularly Bowser for without really thinking about it. In Illuminor's case, he just had his best game as a Raven by far, as I scored it last night. And I want to go through really quickly, but he had 57 scored snaps, 55 blocks, missed only two the whole night. No negative events of any sort, no penetration, no pass rush events of any sort, no penalties. So that scored out to be a .96. I don't usually give an adjustment in the preseason because the level of opponent quality is typically very low unless a player has a lot of highlights. Illuminor had 5 out of 5 successful pulls in 20 snaps at left guard. So what that told me, and that was definitely true with the others as well, is that they were really trying to run scheme that would test his mobility and the other's mobility, as if it's a deciding factor in who gets that left guard role. So 5 out of 20, that's a lot, but 19 total among the four of them attempts to pull in a 57 total snaps that Illuminor played, but only 37 for the other three.
Right. And with Illuminor, the big thing I noticed going from last week to this week is he honestly just looked more willing to find a guy to block. There were too many snaps last week where, you know, if they're going zone left, for example, he would, you know, he's not looking for work in level two. If he doesn't have someone right on his hat making that left step, he would just kind of, you know, run with the play, and you'd kind of see the highlight at the end where they're showing the scuffle and there's Illuminor running away from him and no one's around him. So that was one of the things that kept getting to me when I was rewatching the film. But then when watching this week, the thing that stood out is he looked, you know, like he was participating, as silly as that sounds. He just looked more engaged. And there's still some things I think he needs to work on. I think going from offensive tackle to offensive guard, he's playing pretty high, and I think that's mostly off his first step. So I think we'd like to see him, you know, kind of roll his hips, stay low, and that's just a transition from tackle to guard. Right. And we saw it in his pulls too. Even though he was making the block, I still think he could roll those hips, stay low once he gets to his engage point. So there's still some things that he needs to clean up, but overall, like the difference in from game one to game two was, you know, astronomical, completely different looking player.
Yeah. Night and day. And one of the things from game one that we talked about last week with Coach Evans was talking about how I had really thought that he's playing more like a tackle at guard or was last week, which he did. I think he did a better job of this week in his 20 snaps. Is he was playing at arm's length. So he wants to, as a tackle, you do much more pass blocking. And you do much more arm's length blocking where you want to use your punch and you want to do the other things where you hold your opponent at bay. And he just has a general tendency to want to pinball an opponent with his arms rather than engage him with the body like Powers does. Powers is a get-to-the-body, lean-on-the-body guy. And we have not seen that from Illuminor until last night where I thought I saw more. Now, 5 out of 20 times he pulled, so a lot of those are going to be arm's length maneuvers at the end anyway. You can crunch into someone, but you can also do a very effective pull if you can just get a hand on a linebacker when you outweigh him by 75 pounds.
Well, he had this one play, and it was on a pull. It would have been one of the five, and I don't have the exact time snippet, but he pulled into the B gap perfectly, and he kind of saw the man breaking off of Skura, and rather than continue into level two and let that guy, you know, make a play on the ankles of the running back, he shifts back in and shows a nice cut just to seal the guy. I don't know if you noted that play, but that was one thing that stood out to me. And what that shows me is that he's building that awareness of where the ball is supposed to go and what needs to happen to get the ball there. And that's one thing I find when you're making that transition and making these pulls, you really have to develop that sense of awareness. And it's something it's hard to coach. Like, you can go through so many scenarios, but it's really, you know, playing at game speed and noticing these things. Like, you're looking out of the corner of your eye, you're seeing a guy break off your center who's blocking down the line on that power right, and you know you need to seal him if he's getting loose.
It's very much making a read. It's not unlike what a quarterback has to do. Obviously, a quarterback has many more reads to make, but it's very much like making a read. And I call that the second choice or the next best alternative. And it's just another form of looking for work when you pull. I mean, you pull, you get through that gap. There may not be an option directly in front of you that conserves most of your momentum. It may be a guy to your left, or maybe a guy to your right. It may be a help block is all you can really do. But take what work you can, and you need to kind of have a checklist of what you're looking for first.
Absolutely. And I like take what work you can. You got to find work when you're out there. I always say to my guys, like, you can't have plays where you're not hitting someone. It's obviously it can happen. There's exceptions, but there's always someone to hit, and there's always someone that if you're not going to hit them, at least be going at them to get that contact.
Yeah. Or get them to move even sometimes. I mean, it can be that a left guard pulling through there is not going to be able to hit the cornerback because he won't let him, but at least make him concede the ground you want him to concede. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on. We've talked enough about Illuminor. I want to talk about Patrick McCary here for a minute, because he's gotten a lot of buzz in camp. And there's one main reason is he's doing most of the 7-on-7 snaps. And that means they trust his shotgun snaps to be kind of on the money. And that's a very positive trait to have, obviously. He got a left guard and center trial in this game. It did not go as well as the other players. 37 plays, 31 blocks, 5 missed. He allowed one penetration that was quite bad, where he got shed immediately at the line of scrimmage. Actually shed and pushed to the ground at the line of scrimmage, and the runner was taken down for a loss. Now, it worked out to be 29 points, 0.78 per play. If he was playing all his time at guard, that would be a low C, but he didn't play all his time at guard. He had time at center as well. So it really is on that C-minus, D-plus border, which, you know, obviously is not a step forward in terms of what he's doing. It's not a complete fall off the cliff, but it's not a step forward in terms of what he's doing. 3 out of 6 pulls was maybe the most disappointing number from my perspective, other than what I just said otherwise.
Yeah, McCary last week, the plays that stood out for me were some of the traps that he ran. He was coming off quick. He had a quick first step, and he was making great contact staying low. I didn't see that as much this week. It just reminds me, like, he's an offensive tackle for the Cal Bears, right? Like, he played left tackle, right tackle, and left guard, but he was primarily Cal's left tackle. So, you know, he's coming into camp, and they're asking him to play center. I remember he tweeted out a picture. It said, new team, new league, new position. So he's got a lot going through his head right now. He's also got to add some to his anchor. He's coming off that injury that he suffered in the third last game of his college season. I think for him, I think he's going to get overwhelmed quickly. He looks like the kind of guy that, you know, may need a year on the practice squad, but I could really see him becoming a factor. The big thing I'd like to see him do is just be more willing to get right into the face of a guy. Some of those trap blocks work well for his style because, you know, you're catching a guy off guard, or you're sealing, or you're blindsiding. But when he's kind of asked to go directly at the guy, he's having some problems. And that could be, again, the transition from being an offensive tackle to an offensive guard or center and playing on the interior, where the guys are bigger, the guys are meaner, you know, you're getting more contact on every play. So that's kind of my observations from a coaching evaluation standpoint.
It's good stuff. And I think McCary is a guy that, not with impunity, there would be a risk of losing him, but that they can try and slip by onto the practice squad and potentially still have him available.
It's really going to depend on his games. I mean, if you take that game one tape and you're another team, given the O-line depth across the league, mm-hmm. I'm picking him up. If especially a guy that can play some center, like, it's hard to find nowadays. And the fact that one question, I know you've been at camp. Has he played any offensive tackle at camp?
No, I have not noticed it. I was only there for the two Jaguars practices. He didn't in either of those games. I think he's been exclusively at guard and center. And I don't think it would really make a lot of sense to have him on the outside, even with the threes. I'm not sure it would make sense.
his arms are way too short from what I've seen, and I think you can see that in his past sets. So that's kind of why I think he didn't get a lot of love during the pre-draft process as a tackle, because I know that's what he was hoping to play. But I mean, he's got a high ceiling. I really like his game, and I think he looks like a really smart kid who's picking up a new position really quickly. So definitely a step back for him, but I think he's got all the potential in the world to really bounce back moving forward.
All right. I mean, the Ravens obviously really believe on him based on when they put him into this game. Because you can talk about the depth chart, and Harbaugh can manipulate that or not, or he can tell the PR department how to put together and make sure that no rookies get on top. But one thing that doesn't lie about your depth chart is when you enter the games. That's really tells about what the coaches feel about you. And for Mekari to get that third series and then get that very extended trial at two positions, they really believe they might have something. So, I'm still hopeful. I look back a few years ago, the Ravens had a UDFA center, Easton, I think it was Easton, right? Nick Easton, maybe. And he went on to play several years in the NFC primarily. I think he might have been traded to the 49ers for a conditional pick. It might or might not have worked there, but then he spent some time in either Seattle or someplace else in the NFC, maybe Minnesota. And it actually was a decent player for several years. They were able to trade him at the end of camp. And maybe that Mekari is a guy they can trade if there's really that much interest in him, whether it's for a conditional pick or another surplus player. You know, a slot corner comes to mind, frankly, at this point, that the Ravens might really have use for.
Yeah, another guy that could, and I know we're going to talk about him in a second, but another guy that could be that potential. We have a log jam at interior offensive line. You know, we're not keeping guys that can only play guard and center. You're probably going to keep one, maybe two. You might trade Bradley Bozeman if Mekari stands out enough as a center. I think Bozeman at this point would have a little bit more trade value to get you a better return on maybe someone else's depth slot corner that you may want to get back. But it's always hard to project these things or what other people's opinions are. But we were having that debate on Twitter about, you know, what do we do if we have Mekari and Bozeman? They're both kind of guard centers. You want to keep a guy like Hurst for his versatility. You're not going to get rid of Powers because he's a rookie and has looked good. So you have that logjam of kind of four guys for three spots. So that's another option. Again, if Mekari can really stand out in the next two games, is maybe you look at Bozeman as a potential trade candidate and you think he might have a little bit more trade value.
Yeah, I do think he'd have more trade value because he played 230 scored snaps last year, more than that, including penalties. So I think he's probably got more trade value along that line. People would be less sure of Mekari. There's the 4 versus 3 option value years, so you people could look at that. Bozeman's also a draft pick, so because of that, you get the fourth year really cheap for him, whereas Mekari would be a UFA in year 4. So it's really not that much of a difference in terms of future option value for the team. I guess I could see trading Bozeman. I don't see why the team is locked down to Hurst with what Illuminor and Sanat have showed at tackle. So to me, Hurst is a fallback position at guard at this point. You have a guy who makes more money than all the other players, so you'd like to save a little cap if you could. There is actually a cap savings for cutting him this year, a small one. It's only about $1 million. And you could parcel him off to another team for, you know, maybe it's a 7th round pick, but you have a more established player that somebody else may believe in more as a swing player than the Ravens do, or be able to use more than the Ravens can. You know, a team with two good tackles and one guy who looks like a backup who could be good in Illuminor.
Yeah, that factors into it. I think when I look at Hurst, I'm thinking of, we know Harbaugh values in-game experience, and I think they're going to look at Hurst heavily for that, even if it is as a bench player. Just the fact that, you know, he's played so many games, so many snaps at different positions, they may value that higher than some of the other guys that don't have that going for them. But in terms of performance this year and kind of projected upside moving forward, Hurst is definitely on the lower side compared to those other players. Like, mm-hmm. he is who he is at this point in his career.
That's
he's
right.
Not necessarily – it's not a bad thing. If he comes out week one as our starting left guard, I'm not going to necessarily be that upset because of how good 2017 was relative, but it's not a high upside move, right? It kind of reminds me of leaving Orlando Brown on the bench last year. It's like he was passable at tackle. Hurst was passable at tackle, but Brown really has that upside that I think we all wanted to see, right?
Right. Absolutely. I feel the same way. You got definitely have growth from this point forward, whereas the only surprise you're likely to get from James Hurst at this point is a negative one. He could get hurt. He could all of a sudden lose some significant amount of ability. We think that his very poor play at the end of last year at guard was a result of injury. And from Hurst's point of view, I certainly hope that was the case, because if it wasn't, then, you know, there's been a significant ability decline, and we can't really expect 2017 to happen again. So
anyway, you had Hurst, just to double check, you had Hurst as the worst graded game you ever had from an offensive lineman, right?
That's correct. And that's in over 1,000 individual games graded over 12 seasons.
Yeah, that's outrageous. Sorry, I just wanted to double check that, because I thought that was in my head.
Yeah, that's correct. It was bad. It was 30 snap effort, so, you know, there have been longer games probably that are in the same category, but nothing quite as bad in terms of score. Okay, let's keep going here. Bradley Bozeman, we do want to make sure we hit on. He's kind of been the forgotten man in this whole competition, because I don't believe his roster spot, other than the possibility of trade that you've mentioned, is really in any jeopardy. I mean, he's clearly the backup center and guard, and the first backup at center, I think, that they would like to have as of right now. In this game, 37 plays, 34 blocks, 3 missed, no other negative events of any sort in this game. So it didn't allow any kind of pressure, didn't allow any penetration that caused a loss on a play, didn't get penalized. 0.92, that's an A at guard. And, you know, frankly, is just a big step forward for him. It would be not quite an A at center, where he spent some of his time, but still a very fine game from Bozeman. And, you know, I think it's a purely a positive.
Bozeman, to me, has not gotten a lot of love. I brought him up last week when kind of the left guard conversation was happening, and everyone's talking about, you know, is it Makari versus Powers, with thinking Illuminor was out of the picture after week one. But, you know, you're forgetting about a guy like Bozeman, who played really well at guard last year and who keeps performing. Like, he's not a flashy player. He's kind of that blue collar, you know, construction worker type guy who just gets the job done, right? So my biggest thing with him is I think he keeps dropping his head, and he's kind of aiming with the crown of his helmet, and it's giving him too much forward momentum in some of his blocks. And I noticed twice, I had it marked down twice in his notes, he got shed because of that, where he had too much forward momentum, and the guy kind of did the Toro, you know, bull with the red flag on him, but he recovered really well. So it's like he's getting used to people doing that to him. So I think what he needs to do is just kind of sit back a little more once he starts moving forward on run sets, and, you know, make sure he's moving forward with his hands up, rather like his hands up into his the chest plate of the defender, rather than leaning forward with his head. And that's just going to come with some more time and some more experience. But he's an Alabama center. He's played in huge moments. He's just such a solid player, but he's not flashy. And he's one of those guys, what we were talking about with James Hurst, I don't see a super high ceiling in terms of development, but that doesn't mean at all that he can't become a super solid starting caliber guard or center in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm there. I mean, I think he could certainly has at least a ceiling that would be a slightly above average guard in the NFL. And, you know, again, we're talking a ceiling there, but he did. The one play that I really liked from this game was on the second of Ricard's 1 yard conversion. So it was a 2 yard run up the middle, and he was submarined by the opposing nose. I couldn't even catch the number on the nose tackle. But as often happens in goal line plays, the defenders just try and get extra low to create a pile and allow the linebackers then to make the tackle while the running back's not able to easily negotiate that pile. And he got submarined, as you would expect, by the nose tackle on the play, stepped over him into level 2, which you rarely see in this kind of thing, and made a block there and allowed Ricard actually to push through on the guy that had been submarined as well. So very, very good effort there, and I liked that particular headiness to know when he was being submarined, and I couldn't really see his feet on the play to see what he'd done, but it was effective.
I had him as a +2 on that block. I'm looking at my notes right now. I had him as a +2, and yeah, it's savvy, right? Like it's almost as if he expected it, and he just kind of took the step over to tell Ricard, jump on my back and let's get through here. It was super interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. We're kind of running short on time here, but I want to make sure we talk about Powers. Power is a very consistent game with the exception of the one holding penalty. And I'll tell you what I saw in that play, because I had him 37 for 37 on his other blocks. Okay, now I'm fairly generous about when in doubt, credit a block here. But the offensive holding play, he was beaten by a spin move on the play. So the defender spun off him to the inside, and Powers was beaten, realized it, turned to chase him, and kind of had his hands on him from behind, which I think already got the official from that direction, have his hands on the yellow rag. All right, so he was his trigger fingers were itchy. And then I don't really think he held on the play. I think if anything, maybe he had an illegal block above the back, a block from behind that could have been called on the play, but didn't even really look like he was applying pressure there. McSorley just escaped the mess, and it looked to me like a pretty ticky-tack call, frankly, on Powers. And if that's the worst that happens, you know, he certainly otherwise played very well. A lot of that good stick-to-the-body play that I like to see, made 6 out of 6 pulls, had 2 pancakes in the game. There's just a lot to like about his game otherwise. I can forgive the one penalty in all its ticky-tackiness.
In terms of the guys competing for the left guard spot, I think he's the most powerful drive blocker out of all of them, and I think that keeps standing out as the games go on. Once he gets a guy, he wants to put him through the end zone, and it's great to see. I thought that was a BS hold. I think you're bang on. I think it was a depth perception. He probably thought the ref probably from his angle thought he was holding the jersey. This is the tough part about grading, right? Like, I mean, a flag's a flag, but you almost want to take it away when you're grading. Overall with Powers though, it's some of the same criticism I had when I joined you for the Ben Powers pod. He just has to, you know, work on his leverage, work on his flexibility. But other than that, super solid guy. Really might be more of a right guard, which I speculated a few months ago, just based on his ability to get that push right up front so that when we're going power rights and he's kind of that initial guy clearing out the lane for the puller. But, you know, not to get too much into that's a chat for a further day, but super solid player. I think he has the highest ceiling out of all of these guys, including Illuminar.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that. Exactly. Illuminar, we've seen already, this is his third year, so you can't really ascribe the same kind of ceiling as a draft pick. But Power is also the highest draft pick of this group, so I would expect that, particularly as a rookie. And I agree with you on just to briefly talk about Powers here, that his ability to pivot through that hole should be greatest with that leaning style that's more similar to what Yanda has. You know, that ability to pivot through and hold that seal inside on that defensive tackle.
I hate comparing him to Yanda. I know you're not doing that, and I often think this guy looks like a young Yanda, and that's high praise given how good Marshall Yanda's been, but I see it. Like, I see the same type of skill. I see the same type of mentality. Like, Yanda was the same way. When he got his hands on you, he wanted to put you through the end zone, and I really see something similar with Powers, and that leads to a lot of that speculation. Maybe he's the future right guard, and he's not necessarily the left guard answer, but nonetheless, I mean, if that's true, he's going to be working under Yanda and learning from him, and that nothing but good news for Ravens fans.
I'm sure that should help. All right, well, we could talk offensive line all night, I'm sure, because this is a topic we both really enjoy. But let's move on to some of the other individual performances on offense, because a lot of people do have more interest in the skill position players. I can't understand why. Miles Boykin is first on my list, and we had a big discussion about him from game one, where, you know, he certainly had lots of pluses and minuses in that game. In this game, targeted 3 times, but 2 of the 3 were not really good results. One of them on the right sideline, Billick called him out for not curling back on the sideline. When you're the closest guy to that sideline, you have to come back to the quarterback. That's the rule, and he didn't do it, and that left a chance for an interception. Fortunately, the ball was thrown out of bounds, but he put Jackson at risk of throwing an interception on that play.
Yeah, I think with Boykin, what my biggest concern is the mental aspect is going to start building up on him. And originally after the game one, what I really, you know, gave him credit for was his ability to bounce back and kind of, you know, put the negative in the past, that next play mentality, and go out and ball out for 3 or 4 plays in a row, which ended in the called back touchdown. But this game, it looked like it just kept building on him and building on him. And some of his mistakes are more mental than physical to me, and it's gonna be a tough go for him. He's in the crosshairs of a lot of Ravens fans right now, and I just hope he can really, you know, silence everyone next week and just have another solid game.
Well, right now he looks like the Ravens' number one receiver. I that's just what it looks like to me. Like they really are desperate for him to claim that. Now, Hollywood Brown will come back, but his role is also kind of different. So I'm really talking about the outside deep threat, you know, give you those options, you know, that you normally associate with the larger receivers in this league. Boykin has got to be the guy for that, really. There really isn't anyone else on the Ravens who you could trust to do it. Could Michael Floyd be it for one season? Maybe. You know, could Seth Roberts play a role on the outside and be good for a season? Maybe. Could Chris Moore do it for a season? Maybe. But if you want any kind of a multi-year answer, Miles Boykin is the guy.
And he's your prototypical X receiver. He's all those guys mentioned. I've seen Seth Roberts' Oakland tape, and he did his best work from the slot. Chris Moore is a Z guy, I think. And actually, Chris Moore does some of his best plays from the slot, too. So using some of those three wide receivers on one side sets, you could use Roberts and Moore in the slot. But that means you still need to have that X receiver out there. And other than Floyd, I mean, Jaleel Scott's probably an X, but he's not getting those. You're bang on with the they're getting those evaluation reps in for him. They want the ball to go to him, and that was very apparent last week, and he took advantage after the rough start. But this week it was like, okay, you're struggling, go sit down kind of thing. One thing I do want to throw out, the McSorley interception, a lot of people are blaming Boykin for that. I really can't see why. Based on doing a curl route, you're expecting the ball right in your, you know, right in your teeth when you turn, and it was not even on his inside shoulder. It was on the DB's inside shoulder and should have been to Boykin's outside shoulder. It's hard to ask him to, you know, become a DB when he's expecting the ball right in his grill on that one.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame that on Boykin, but I would say they weren't on the same page somehow. And you're right. I think it's more McSorley's fault than Boykin's on that particular one. And Boykin actually bailed out McSorley on another interception on the slant route. He had a very long reach to barely tip the ball, but number 29 was waiting on that play for an absolute room service interception. He was frankly upset that he didn't get it on the slant that Boykin barely fingertipped.
Yeah, well, that one, me and Adam had a good debate about whether or not that was a drop. So that's one of the fun parts about preseason is, you know, picking those plays and arguing about whose fault it is.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Justice Hill, another big game. Very exciting player. I mean, Baldinger's gushing over Justice Hill has been very entertaining in terms of, I think, his little handheld phone videos he passes out on Twitter that are fantastic. And you know, he's absolutely right that the cutback ability of Hill has just been a thing of beauty. And he gives the team an option to run away from the scheme of the play. And Lamar does that too, but the Ravens need to be very concerned about getting the ball out of Lamar's hand and into the hands of other playmakers who can do similar things. Now, Justice Hill can't do exactly the same things because he doesn't start with the football, but he can do some of the same things in terms of turning their play away from the design scheme.
It's just those unteachable instincts you can see in Hill, like the run he had that went for 6 or 7 yards where I believe it was Baldy's video actually where he did that cutback. And it's just like you look at it and you wonder what's going through his mind when he makes that cut, but it's just natural instincts. Like he finds those seams and he attacks the hell out of it. And it's the same thing that you see from Lamar when he took off for the end zone. Like, you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to you, but that's because you don't think the way they think. He's an electrifying player. I think we're going to be gushing about him for years to come.
Right. I do, too. I really hope that they can do more to incorporate what he does in the passing game, because I think that he can help more with that. And one of the plays we saw late in the game was a little lateral to, who was it, Sam Horn, who took it 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage and then took it 10 yards from there for a 6 yard gain. Or maybe it was the other way. I think it was a 4 yard gain that would take 6 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And what I was thinking in that play, that's not a terrible play or anything, but how much better would that have been if it were Hollywood Brown or Justice Hill on the other end of that? Yeah, it was done off motion, so it'd be no reason why Hill can't also do that.
Yeah, well, one of the things I think Greg Roman is going to have, you know, to get used to is doing exactly what you said and getting the ball into those guys' hands to do some of those plays, you know, whether it's bubble screens or the triple options or whatever he comes up with. That's the challenge right now. It's how do we get it out of Lamar's hands into some of these smaller guys who aren't your, you know, typical receiver sizes. They're more of those college playmakers that you see, the smaller guys who can burn guys or come off a bubble and take it for 50 yards. But they're going to have to do some interesting things with the scheme to make it work for them.
Yeah, a team with three tight ends like the Ravens have that are all capable of moving fine and setting incredible picks, I kind of wonder why the Ravens haven't gone to some of those Steeler pick and rub routes on a more regular basis that would feature a fast player within that group, as well as a, you know, one tight end and maybe one other wide receiver who can create all sorts of problems.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the pick plays, because the touchdown from Snead last week, I can't remember the last time, maybe the Super Bowl drive where we had a pick play actually work. And it was actually off of like a ghost look, you know, with a nine on the outside and an out coming, but Roberts cut in, and it's exciting to see. I find with the scheme I've seen so far, yeah, we're playing against number two, number three defenses, but the scheme looks a lot cleaner. It looks like, you know, the roots are working together to open things up, and it's a huge credit for Greg Roman.
Yeah, it's very exciting to see him call a game there. I'll come up with another pick route for you, pick rub, whatever you want to call it. Was Watson picking off the safety for Macklin's touchdown in the first game of 2017 against Cincinnati?
Okay, I'll have to go back and check that.
The 20-0 win, but it was a thing of beauty. It's worth taking another look. Let's move on. Hayden Hurst had a huge week of practice. Lots of writers gushing over him. Unfortunately, he really did not translate it into a game of any sort. Three targets, one reception for minus one. Made a good effort to try and make a play on that minus one play. That didn't work out. Unfortunately, the play that really stood out to me was the long ball down the left sideline on that first or second drive, I don't recall which one it was, that was on the border of being catchable, certainly was thrown to the right place, but it appeared to me that Hurst, while tracking the football, slowed his rate of progress down the field. And I wasn't able to see it, confirm it from the video replay, not the TV replay, but I was able to kind of confirm what I expected to see in terms of the relative speed of the cornerback, who was just racing by Hurst at that point. And that shouldn't happen with the two players headed in that direction, unless Hurst somehow slows down.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we talked about this before the show started, but I think Lamar placed that ball exactly where it needed to be. Now, some people thought it was thrown too far out of bounds, but I'm sorry, but you throw that anywhere closer inbounds and it's right in the cornerback's kitchen. Like, you got to sometimes put the ball out there for your guys to make big plays. And I think what I've noticed a lot about this preseason is a lot of Ravens fans aren't used to seeing their pass catchers make those types of plays. Mm-hmm. I mean, we haven't had it since 2012 when we had Jacoby and Bolden and Torrey making huge plays, but it's a play you got to expect an NFL playmaker to make. I think you're bang on. I think he lost track. I think he also thought it was going out of bounds, and he kind of, you know, gave up on it. So it's one of those things. We've seen the chemistry build between Lamar and Mark Andrews, and maybe it's just going to take some time for Hayden Hurst, but I said it in my article wrapping up last night's game, I'm starting to enter that concerned phase with Hayden Hurst right now.
Yeah, it's completely justified based on his age, because there's only so much development you really expect for a player in terms of reaching a peak at a certain age. In baseball, you know, the average age of all Triple Crown winners is 27 and change. And it's a very, very strict growth patterns that almost all careers follow. And the steroid era has thrown kind of a monkey wrench in some of that. But they follow very, very strict patterns. And in football, it's even more so. Careers are shorter. You know, the peak age is younger. And when you see a guy, you know, a tight end, it's probably a position where he can last a little bit longer. But we really should be worried at this point about what's Hayden Hurst going to do. He's going to be 26 for the opener, and he's not a young man anymore.
A lot of his pre-draft write-ups were like, you know, he's kind of maxed out physically, and his development is about how much better of a football player can he become in a couple of years when he's entering that prime? And that prime is about next year. So I guess it's just, let's hope that some chemistry builds and he can be useful. I do trust that Roman's going to put him in a position to succeed and give him the reps, but you know, it's at this point where he has to step up this year and he has to step up early.
Yeah, that's a real good point, that Roman is really his best ally at this point in terms of getting him the right opportunities. Let's move on. Trace McSorley. I thought he showed us a lot of things in that first game that were really better. He was under tremendous pressure in the first game. The second game, not so much pressure, and he did not do all that well with it. He had 8 out of 13 ample time and space opportunities through, as I counted, 3 interceptable balls, including one that was intercepted, one we mentioned earlier that was a Boykin deflection from being an interception. You got kind of fortunate on that one. And another room service pick 6 immediately before the Ravens field goal, that it really was a 10-point turnaround in this game. So if you're betting the game, you'd have been very upset with him giving up a pick 6 on that play. You might have lost the Ravens with the spread.
He just looks like a typical rhythm passer, and it's going to be tough for him to really get out of that. Like his touchdown drive, he rallied off, you know, some pretty good throws, and then it ends with, I thought the pass to Chris Moore for the touchdown was perfectly placed. Mm-hmm. He read that safety coming up into the box perfectly, put it right out where he could run onto it, and off he goes. And he had a couple of completions, I believe, before that, but it was kind of the same as last week. He was under a lot of pressure. I think you had a markdown of 7 out of 22 was all he had clean or something. And sorry, I just wasn't sure if I was flipping them. I just think that he's way too, he's not used to the speed of the game yet. It's going to take him some time. The question is he going to have time to do that on the Ravens roster somehow? Is he going to be a third QB? Are they going to try and stash him on the practice squad? I really do hope they keep him, because there's potential there. I definitely see potential, but you know, there's too many mental aspects of his game that aren't there yet. But I mean, we saw that with Lamar last year, right? Like he's thinking too much. He's throwing ducks. So that's kind of the issue right now. It looks a little bit too, I hate to do the comparison, but it looked Nathan Peterman-y to me, where he could kind of raffle off some 3 or 4 good throws in a row and then just throw a random interception that makes no sense to anyone, and you're wondering where that came from. So that's kind of the vibe I got last night, was, you know, he would put out some beautiful passes and then, okay, what was that? So yeah, it's going to be a tough uphill battle for him.
Yeah, the thing that strikes me as is maybe he's thinking too much in some sense. If he's has a better game under pressure, and hey, we got a very small sample size, I'll start with that. But he has a better game under pressure than a game where he had just tremendous time to throw this last one with 8 out of 13. Because I mean, he had a 9-second pocket, and I blame some of this on the receivers. But when he floated the left sideline, had all kinds of time. Macari kept blocking, was very effectively. You know, it's 9 seconds to find somebody on that play. The Ravens got to be able to manufacture a play there, and I hope with Brown on the field that, or Hill on the field as well, that they're going to be able to do more of that.
One thing I'll give him credit for is I found he's navigated the pocket really well, and that includes some of the plays last week where he didn't have a lot of time. I thought he stepped up appropriately, and I thought he got outside of the pocket appropriately. So, I mean, if we're looking for places to give him some credit, I think that's one of them. It's his pocket navigation.
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, obviously the other thing to credit him for was that beautiful 17-yard boot. I've really never seen a fake run any better than that. The handoff to Turner was perfect. Turner did, you know, closed in on the football. It was fourth and short play, right? It was 4th and 1, and he ran for 17, wasn't it? And then the beautiful thing to watch, we had the pull from Powers helped sell that fake. But the other thing that was beautiful to watch is the edge defender on that side. It's number 52 for Green Bay, and the name is escaping me right now. It's a recent, fairly high draft pick. Anyway, he had the proper position on Illuminor to contain McSorley, but he gave it up and he chased the ghost going the other direction. It was just unbelievably good fake.
I like the high step at the end.
Yeah.
Okay. Adding a little Justice Hill razzle dazzle to it. I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Maureen was unhappy because he didn't cut back to the inside. She thought, oh, he could add 5 more yards. And I think it was probably a pretty good run out of bounds situation.
I'll take 17 on 4th and short.
Yeah. All right, last player I want to talk about is Jaleel Scott. We can talk about anybody you like as well, Cole. But a big step forward for him in my mind. Two catches. Again, showing the ability to get up and get the football that he didn't show last year. He wasn't earning targets last year. He wasn't playing certainly early enough. In this game, he was in the game a little bit earlier than he had been the previous week. We keep this handy-dandy chart for this. But he came in the game at the on the last drive of the first half in this game. So that's a... that's earlier than he certainly was coming in at any point during the last during last year's preseason, and he's getting better opportunities, and I like that. I think he is right on the cusp of making the roster. A couple special teams tackles, one on a punt, one on a kickoff yesterday, really helped as well, helped his cause.
Yeah, I was doing a little research into some of the roster trends with the wide receivers over the last few years for the Ravens, and one thing that stood out to me is that even before they kind of became a run preferred team before Lamar, they were still keeping five wide receivers and six if that six guy provided special teams value. So going back into the days of Michael Campanaro returning punts, or going into Janarian Grant and Tim White returning, because after Grant and White were gone, they only had five on the roster all year, and Lastly was the fifth guy that was never active once last year. So I think that's something you have to consider. I know a lot of people hate to talk about special teams, especially about wide receivers, but his ability to make those special teams plays means that they can put him on the field, keep him active on game day, and then use him as, you know, a red zone target or something to work him into the offense. And that's something that his biggest threat for a roster spot right now is Antoine Wesley, who had a great game last night too. But Wesley's not making those special teams plays. So if you're looking at a six wide receiver who may not get a ton of actual playing time at wide receiver, because typically you have one wide receiver inactive on game day, you have to look at some of the special team abilities. So I think he's standing out there. You're right, he had two tackles, one on a punt, one on a kick, but he also had three standout special teams plays last week. So that's going to be the difference maker. But in terms of his wide receiver abilities, you're bang on. He's playing bigger. He's playing up to his size. And the only issue is, so is Antoine Wesley. So how are they going to keep both? And I can't see them keeping seven.
Right. And they actually have very similar prospective option value from this point, because Jaleel Scott's a second-year player, but he has that cheap fourth year because he was a draft pick. And the Ravens will have to pay more if Wesley pans out 3 years from now for him as a player. So anyway, I'm not saying that's a big difference, but there shouldn't be as much difference between a first-year undrafted and a second-year drafted player as many people think there might be.
Yeah, well, and I think the thing that stands out to me so far is Wesley kind of looks like Scott did last year in terms of his upper body looks a little bit lighter. He's pretty thin, tall, wiry, thin guy. Scott was the same way, and you can tell he's really bulked up. So I'm wondering, you know, is there a way to somehow IR stash Wesley and give him that kind of year to grow? I guess they don't practice on injured reserve, but you know what I mean? Like, give him a year of keeping him under team control to give him another shot next year. Cause I can't see him lasting on the practice squad. His college film was solid, and I'm shocked he didn't get drafted. I was so pumped when we got him, but with Scott really emerging and showing that special teams value, I worry about keeping Wesley around.
One of the reasons the Ravens got Wesley this year was because their wide receiver situation was so dire that it was an easy sale to Wesley and his agent probably to say, you know, hey, don't you want to come play here where you might really have a chance to make the roster, might even have a chance to play some on game day as a rookie. And I think that if the Ravens situation remains as dire, there will be a different Antoine Wesley next year. So, yeah, they'll lose Wesley. They won't be able to keep on the practice squad the whole year. They might, quote unquote, get lucky and have use for Wesley if they have an injury of their own and be able to bring him up from the practice squad. But the first team that maybe it's not the first team, but maybe it's the fifth team that needs a wide receiver is going to bring Wesley up. And if the Ravens happen to be in the first five, they'll get him.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Another thing about the Wesley picking the Ravens, it reminded me, I made this comparison on Twitter when James Hurst actually chose the Ravens. from North Carolina. He got hurt and missed that last year. And I believe that was the year we lost Eugene Monroe, if I remember correctly, and drafted Stanley. But I bet Hurst saw that same type of actually, that's not that year. Either way, it's a good point to make, and it makes me wonder why we haven't been able to land more stud UDFA wide receivers as of late, because we haven't had that wide receiver talent in the room, that's for sure.
Yeah, there don't seem to be as many stud UDFA wide receivers. I mean, it's probably true that the Ravens also are more attuned to finding those linebackers, which is, by the way, part of the reason is the linebacker group in particular is a very deep size and shape pool. So there's many more people who are the appropriate size to play inside linebacker in the NFL, and that's why you can find some good ones with superior scouting and talent evaluation. With wide receivers, there's more of a specific body type, a specific amount of speed you have to have. So the pool is smaller of people who are tall and can run fast. Let's start with that. And you just don't have as many to work through, and the people who exist out there are all fairly thoroughly scouted. So I think you're less likely to get UDFA guys. And I'd really have to think back to the last truly great UDFA receiver in this league. And I'm sure you can think of three, but I can't think of the last one. Now, Hushman Zada was a seven, but I've tried. I think the Marcus Colston might have been a seven also. I'm trying
Adam
to think
Thielen.
Of who. Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a but that to me. Everyone was talking about that last year when he had his huge breakout, but I mean, that's a pure exception to the rule. I think you're right. You don't see it as much as you do at other positions, but he was one that comes off the top of my head, and I can't even think of two more. That's all I got.
All right. Well, let's move on, and we'll do the offensive MVPs, and I usually do this with our guest here, and we'll just pick them 3-2-1 like hockey stars. You want to start off with your number three for the game?
I'm going to give my number three to Justice Hill. He really stood out. I think he'd probably be higher on my list if he got more work, but he only had the 10 carries for 49 yards and a touchdown. But with some of those flashy plays, he gets my number three.
Yeah, he's my number three as well. Really the same reasons. And I think it was flashes we saw more than actual production in this game, although it did break off the one run for 14 or so. That was a really nice one. But very excited about what Justice Hill brings the Ravens. Number two.
We'll go with, I'm actually going to give it to Patrick Ricard. Now, hear me out on this one. He only had a few plays, but what I really like about his ability to get in the game and take advantage of his snaps and the fact that they came on first team drives made him really stand out to me. He also had a few pretty nice plays on, he was in on tight end with Uzela as the fullback on the Hill drive. So, I mean, I know people might, you know, kind of roll their eyes at me because he didn't get a whole lot of work, but folks, this is seizing your opportunity in the preseason, and this is how guys make rosters.
He made excellent block after excellent block out of the I formation in this game, and then the two carries he got were the first. I don't know that he hasn't had a preseason carry before, but he's never had a regular season carry. He's had, I think, four receptions, but he's had those were his first two carries he's ever had for the Ravens, as far as I know, and they were both conversions. That is an incredible additional high leverage talent to bring. And when you look at the Ravens last year, I'm going to mention a stat that was given to me by @Yoshi2052. By the way, give him a follow because Josh is really good at figuring out all sorts of things from available data on Pro Football and Baseball Reference. But last year, with Lamar on the field, the Ravens were only 12 of 17 on third and one. With Lamar not on the field, they were 23 of 26. So they actually had a significantly lower percentage with Lamar of just, you know, about 70%, 70.6, I think it would work out to be. So that's really not very good for the NFL. You'd want better than that. Patrick Ricard, if he can do what he did in this game with good regularity, I'm going to say 85% maybe of the time, I think that would add an enormous high leverage component to the Ravens offense.
It's just another hammer to have out there because that's what he is. He's a hammer.
All right. So that's my number two is Chris Moore. I love he's kind of been forgotten about, but he's the ultimate garbage man in terms of a bad ball catcher. Throw it anywhere in the area, big catch radius. He'll go get it. And what he's done the last 2 years in terms of improving his catch percentage is just one of the best improvements I've ever seen year over year or period over period from a Ravens receiver.
Well, he's 100% in the preseason, right? Six for six.
I think that's right. And last year he was up right around 80% for the year, or 76.
75. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Chibs is a big Chris Moore guy, so I have to hear about it all the time over on NZI.
All right, who's your number one in this game?
I just pulled up your article and I stole your number three and I'm about to steal your number one. It's Jermaine Illuminor. I mean, what a bounce back! He's got a tremendous shot to run with this through the next two games, and we'll see if he can steal that left guard position.
Yeah, there was a really good point made by Coach Evans on the show last week, who said that if you're better off trying Jermaine Illuminor at left guard first and letting him fail there, which, by the way, didn't happen, obviously, but because then you still have a chance to use him at left tackle where he played last year. But if you really need to teach him to play guard again, and I'm extrapolating now what he said, then you want to have him for potentially more time at left guard. And now with Illuminor playing well, you know, the Ravens now have the good problem to have of having a guy who can play multiple positions.
That's it. And it may make a guy like James Hurst, like you said earlier, irrelevant, because that's James Hurst's value right now, is his ability to play across the line. And if we have that in Illuminor, well, you know, maybe we can keep Mekari and keep that upside, right?
Yeah, there you go. That would definitely be an option. Also be an option to still keep Sanat, I think. And despite the fact that he missed this game, I haven't ruled him out. But that's a discussion for another day. Josh, how about you take us through some mailbag questions?
Sure. Let's get into it. Let's jump in with Matthew Troy, who was wondering, is it harder to evaluate the bubble receivers when we have such a run game, especially when we're not forced into many third and longs during the preseason?
Yeah, it's a great point. They're not doing that much with the receivers. They're not throwing that many passes, even in these preseason games where they have, 64 plays, I think it was this week, and they had more than that, maybe 69 in the first game. So it's not a lot of receiving opportunities. They're looking to get games over. They're looking to establish, you know, what they're doing. But they also have big choices to make at running back, so that's part of it. Cole, what do you have to add to that?
I think that's part of it. I think another thing we need to remember is some of the numbers may get skewed towards rushes because the Ravens are apparently the dynasty of the NFL for preseason games, and they just seem to always be winning. So sometimes when you get down to the garbage time, they're just running out the clock. But I will echo that concern. A guy like Jaleel Scott, I thought after week one, I would have really liked to see him kind of jump in into the start of the second quarter snaps, and we didn't see that. Like you mentioned, he kind of came in towards the end of the first half, and I'd really like to see him against better competition. So I do find that frustrating a bit, because you want to evaluate these guys against who they'll actually be playing against and not the quote unquote UPS drivers.
How much does it help that they get to face them in practice when they've got to go up against our pretty good defense?
Yeah, I think that would help. I mean, they're not in pads is the big problem. So they're not getting the same kind of press coverage technique that they'll get in a real game. The one thing that I think Shane Ray in particular is a victim to that, as being a guy who, you know, in gameplay, they're going to be trying to break that wrist of his, you know, see if it's still working after a couple nice hits or arm ups from that offensive lineman. It's not the same, but you know, obviously they can use their technique. They can work on certain things in practice, like boxing out with the body, at least.
I actually tweeted about this last week. I said it's one of the most frustrating things as a Ravens fan is every time we see kind of recaps of practices, it's, you know, was the defense just really good or was the offense really bad? Or it's really making that determination, because that DB group is very solid. And it is good to see some of these guys making plays against them, and some of the bubble guys like Scott and like Wesley, who, you know, their names stand out as making a big touch in the back of the end zone type thing.
All right. You mentioned the battle at running back. Does Hill and Richards back-to-back great performances put Dixon now on the outside of the 53? This is coming from Bart Harley.
Right. We covered that a little bit. Yes. For me, it does. I think Dixon's in a lot of trouble right now. And it's not that I don't like Dixon, the running back. I love Dixon, the running back. In fact, I'd probably take Dixon, the running back, over Edwards, the running back, for this 1 year. But I wouldn't take him with all the GM considerations. We get 1 year out of Dixon, or we can have three more years out of Edwards at a dirt cheap number, and I couldn't make that exchange.
As much as I like having Dixon as kind of a fourth guy just to keep running backs fresh and also have options in case an injury does arise, it is going to be tough for him to make the roster given he doesn't have a lot of special team value. But I think just to kind of counter my point, it's kind of what you said, like the GM concerns absolutely play in here. And not to mention, he came off limping, and after having suspension and injury concerns in the past, you don't want to see that in the preseason, and that may really weigh in the minds of the GM.
All right. So do you think we keep three or four running backs?
I'm with three plus Ricard.
I'm speculating four plus Ricard, but I definitely see Ben's point.
All right, so you're taking both sides of that question from Carolyn Johnson, who is also wondering about Moore as a lock of the 53 as one of the five wide receivers.
Yeah, he's a lock now. I didn't think that necessarily at the beginning of camp, and GM considerations come in for him too as a fourth-year player. In fact, you can just blanket that over all fourth-year NFL players. They're fighting for their job when they come to camp, unless they're superstars, unless they've already been extended, unless they're first-round draft picks who have a fifth-round option. You come as a fourth round, as a year four player, you're fighting for your job against players who you have to be better than that are younger than you.
People are going to think I'm a special teams coach, but I thought he was a lock going into camp just simply because of his special teams value and his ability to play the wide receiver position. But his performance has put him into an absolute solidified lock, in my opinion.
All right, Jim Keen gets in here. Do you think the experts are right referring to Powers as slow and stiff and a long time till he's NFL ready?
Why don't you start with that one, Cole, because I know what you feel about how an older woman could help him out.
So for our friends listening, I'd go back and listen to our Ben Powers podcast because I addressed this. So my suggestion to Ben Powers before the season started was that he should find a nice – 40, 50-year-old Baltimore woman who's going to yoga class every morning so that he can join in and work on that flexibility. But no, I got to say, I didn't see a lot of those concerns on the college tape. I mean, I'm far from an expert, but I just didn't see them as playing a left guard in Lincoln Riley's scheme at Oklahoma. You have to be athletic to do some of the things he was asked to do, and he did those. Going up to some of what we've seen through two games, I'm not seeing a ton of athleticism concerns, and I'll leave it to you, Ken. Maybe you could speak. Was it an athletic concern on that spin move that he got the hold on there? No. Was it the lateral quickness? What are you thinking?
No. I think you could be the dancing bear of right tackles, and you get beat by that particular spin move. I think it was. Exactly. We saw Ogden get beat regularly by Freeney using that spin move, and it was an A move, and he got beaten. It happens. But I would have just given him a pressure on the play and not a penalty.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you can get your questions in and steer the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag FilmStudyMailbag or on FilmStudyRavens.com by commenting on the blog post. We're going to close out the mailbag with Minion Hunter, who is sending pictures and concerns because there's this photo going around the internet of Lamar Jackson having three open wide receivers before he takes off running. And Minion Hunters, of course, wants to know if that's true and is he not seeing his going through his progressions properly before tucking.
Well, there is a point to be made here. Now, there a lot of quarterbacks can look at a certain degree angle on the field and use the easy eye technique. You kind of look through it like you're looking through a mirror, and you can see a wider area. But eventually, you have to focus down and make a choice and throw it. Lamar, at that point, obviously had looked over at least two receivers there and had decided, hey, there's this wide open area of the field to run, which was the correct choice. I mean, look what happened. And, sad thing about the block, it was completely unnecessary and superfluous to getting Lamar in the end zone there. But I saw the immediate video from right before. It did show three guys, any of whom could have been thrown the ball for a short game.
I signed off on this on my article. How many times did we complain about Joe Flacco throwing short of the sticks on third down? Both of those routes that were open, I only saw two. I didn't see three, but of the two routes that I saw, both are short of the sticks, and the DBs are giving the cushion because the DB knows where the first down marker is. How often do we see that? Just let him make the catch and tackle him short. They're already in field goal range. And the Justin Tucker's the kicker. He's making that 52-yarder. I guess it would have been a shorter kick, but nonetheless, Lamar Jackson made the absolute right move, and if you want him to throw short of the sticks and it's fourth down and we're kicking a field goal, well, I mean, that is what it is. I want the electric playmaker. Sorry.
On board with that.
Yeah, I think we talked a lot last year about how his biggest weapon is his feet, and you can't tell him to just not ever use his feet when that's the right answer.
You're telling him not to be an instinctual player. And again, it's like what I said about Justice Hill. These guys just have that natural ability to – the game slows down and they see a hole, and that's exactly what Lamar did. And I'll tell you, I will take Lamar making those types of runs versus read option runs where the defensive end's looking for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. There's very few teams that will even play a spy on Lamar, but when they do, you know, that's a player taken out of the play. So he's going to have a better opportunity on the pass. So I love that it happened, and you got to sometimes you got to put a fear of Lamar back into people.
All right, well, let's get our plugs in. Cole, thank you for joining us today. I saw that your grades from this past preseason game are already up on Russell Street Report. What else? Do you have anything else you're working on for Russell Street Report or anything coming up with the Neutral Zone Infraction podcast? If you want to share with us and our listeners about that.
Absolutely. Well, first off, I just want to thank you guys for having me on. It's such a treat to always join you guys and talk. Ken, I really appreciate the invite. So you can find me on Twitter at ColeJacksonRSR. I'm tweeting pretty much daily about observations, a lot of O-line play, a lot of D-line play. I'm going to be jumping into some charting of the offensive scheme, trying to kind of get into the mind of Greg Roman to see what he's doing. And so that'll be coming out on Russell Street Report. And then you can find me, Adam, and Chibs over on the Neutral Zone Infraction podcast. We're releasing weekly once the season starts, so be sure to check in over there.
All right, that's awesome. And Ken, you got your grades and breakdown up on filmstudyravens.com, and I know you're working on your defense report as we speak, probably, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, not this exact moment, but yes, overnight I'll finish that up. We've done all the note taking for it. So we have an aggressive schedule coming out for the remainder of this weekend and into next week. But we have a defensive article come out sometime tomorrow morning. The podcast will be loaded, of course, by then. And then a defensive podcast we're doing with Ingraven Vids, sorry, the YouTube star tomorrow. So we'll be excited to talk to him and get his perspective on the defense. And then a little later this week, and I'm not sure the exact day, we'll have the offensive line scoring in more detail for the four guys who really got this extended trial, Lumenor, Makare, Bozeman, and Powers in this game. So I got a lot coming out still this week, and that's at filmstudyravens.com. Follow me on Twitter at filmstudyravens, and love to hear from you. We want to hear all your stuff at hashtag filmstudymaildag.
Right, and then Ken, I believe on Tuesday morning, you are going to, and we'll plug this on social media constantly, but I believe Tuesday morning you're going to be over on the Ravens Reddit page doing a Ask Me Anything.
Yeah, that's the plan, and Tuesday morning sounds like a great day to do it. We might do it also Wednesday morning, so please kind of just check back there if you would and see what's going on, or check on filmstudyravens.com and we'll post when it's going to occur.
Yes, we will. All right, guys. Well, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture, and when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space, just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in-store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.